got you with the left, the left. You will fake, so one bone got you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake, so one bone got you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
Welcome, 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 bitches. Happy Thursday to everybody. Donald Trump's budget. What? What? I'm Little John today. He released the newest version of his budget. And, oh, man, is it bad. I'm going to give you nothing but facts. Nothing but facts, y'all. The facts speak for themselves on this thing. So I'll give you the overall breakdown. I'll give you the 66 programs, count them, 66, that are being eliminated in his budget. Then there's the... it sounds ridiculous to say, but it's real. This is not fake. Fake news. His budget includes a $2 trillion math error. Oh, that's so sad. $2 trillion. And then we have some wins from Democrats who are Bernie Sanders style Democrats. We have a story from last night. Oh boy. You know how I always mention that movie The Campaign? What happened last night was like straight out of the movie The Campaign with Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis. Woo! On the eve of a special election, wait until you hear what the Republican did. It's like super close to what actually happened in the movie, punching a baby. It's like almost there. So we got all that and much more. Sit down, buckle up, let's get started. We're going to dive right into it with the abysmal budget. Here's the overall breakdown of Donald Trump's new proposed budget in a nutshell. As you can see, a 31% cut to the Environmental Protection Agency. That's what he wants. Well, that's beyond disastrous. 29% cut to state and other international programs. 21% cut to the Department of Agriculture. 20% cut to the Department of Labor. 16% to the Army Corps of Engineers, 16% for Health and Human Services, 16% for Commerce. And then the increases, Defense, of course, a 5% increase, Veterans Affairs, 6%, and Homeland Security, 7%. The only one that makes sense there is Veterans Affairs. That would be the VA. Everything else is just absolutely gratuitous. So this is what the Republicans want to do moving forward. People say that a budget is a moral document. It absolutely is, because it shows you what your priorities are. And basically the priorities of the Trump administration are a lot more for military, even though we already have the largest military in human history. By far and away, we spend more on our military than the next 9 other biggest militaries combined. But still, a lot more over there for the empire, for imperialism. What happened, Don? I thought you said you wanted to, you know, bring the troops home and rebuild infrastructure and stuff like that. Forget, that was all campaign rhetoric bullshit, nonsense. More for that and less for virtually everything else. I couldn't even keep up with all the different articles from different outlets that came out where, you know, one would say the dramatic cuts to scientific research would cripple, you know, the attempt to cure X disease. There were articles like that. Articles, of course, on Medicaid. We covered the story the other day. Even though Trump repeatedly said, I'm not going to cut Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. As part of this budget, it's an $800 billion cut to Medicaid. And that's on top of the $880 billion cut he wants in Trump Care, his Obamacare replacement bill. So he said, I'm not going to cut Medicaid. He wants to cut it over $1.6 trillion. A $1.6 trillion lie. He doesn't give a shit. Whatever. I don't care. You can't trust anything I say. And speaks for itself, man. A 31% cut to the EPA. Yes, that would mean the worst case scenario. It's funny how, like, I always remember Sean Hannity likes to do this trick where he rails against the left for saying, they have no real arguments. They just strawman us on the right as if we don't want clean water and clean air. Like, of course we're in favor of that. The net effect of a 31% cut to the already underfunded EPA, yes, is not having clean water and not having clean air and not regulating properly. And they already, Trump signed an executive order already that allows coal companies to dump waste into the waterways. So go talk to people in West Virginia and see how it's going. Paula Swearingen, who Justice Democrats are running against Joe Manchin, she talks about that all the time. She said, my water runs orange and purple and black. You gonna tell me that, what, Republicans are for clean water? Well, they sure as hell aren't implementing it in terms of policy. They're doing the opposite. So, yes, that's what they want. They want, you have a guy who doesn't even believe in climate science who's the head of the EPA, and they're appointing industry people who are from the industries they're supposed to be regulating to leadership roles within the EPA. So that's the fox guarding the hen house trick. Hey, to look after oil companies, let's put a former oil company executive. How's that sound? Yeah, I'm sure he's going to regulate them. No, he's going to let them get away with whatever the fuck they want to get away with. That's the way this works. So this is, again, worst case scenario. 20% cut to Department of Labor. I mean, Health and Human Services. If it's anything for poor people or middle-class people, if we're talking about programs that are for regular people in the country, you're the ones who are getting the axe. Whereas if it's for the military and industrial complex, of course, if it's for the rich and if it's for Wall Street, you get whatever you want. I mean, remember, Trump's budget puts the Bush tax cuts on steroids because it goes right back to the Bush tax cut rates. And then on top of that, it eliminates the estate tax, which they call the death tax, which only applies to like 0.01% of families, people who have fucking estates. It's over $5 million, I think. That's who the estate tax applies to. They say, yeah, let's stop taxing rich dead people. Let's cut taxes for Wall Street executives in the top 1%. And at the same time, let's shift the burden onto middle-class people and poor people and cut government programs that are used to help poor people. And increase military spending, even though we have 800 military bases around the world right now, and it costs $100 billion a year to maintain it, and we have 7 different interventions going on, and candidate Trump said, we're going to get out of those wars and rebuild here at home, redo the infrastructure. All lies. Nothing but lies. His budget proposal is just establishment Republican 101. This is the same kind of a budget you would have gotten from Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, or any of the other cretins who are there to serve corporate America. That is exactly what this is. Trump serves corporate America and the military-industrial complex. And again, the proof is in the numbers. You can see where they're moving the billions of dollars around to, and the answer is the military and taking it away from middle class and poor people. Okay. And by the way, we already know, just one more point about this, we already know what happens when you have the priorities that George W. Bush had or Ronald Reagan had, or you have the policies in place that we had in the country in the 19-teens and 1920s. What happens? Either a recession or a depression. It's across the board historically when you implement trickle-down economics. You cut taxes for the rich, you deregulate. It always happens that you have a boom-bust cycle. So the boom is like the Roaring Twenties. That's why they called it the Roaring Twenties. Ha ha, the good times are never going to stop. Look how great we're all doing. Oh my God, it was all fake and the bubble popped and now we're all poor. What the fuck just happened? And then also under George W. Bush, what happened? You know, hey, oh look, the economy's doing great. Oh, my God, it was all fake. It was all a bubble, and it burst. There's the subprime mortgage crisis, and now the Great Recession. You know, under Reagan, when he was in office, everybody went, oh, look, he unleashed the beast of free market capitalism. Look at this. We have nonstop growth. As soon as he got out of office, immediately that bubble burst too, and then everything went down. You had a recession. So what we never learn the lessons of history, or the Republicans just don't care because priority number one is getting more money to their corporate buddies. So they don't care if that means the economy crashes after a while, after you have the fake growth in the boom cycle. They don't give a shit. But the thing that's so disingenuous is that everybody pretends like we've never, like we don't have the evidence and we've never seen what happens in this scenario. We've seen it time and time and time again. You're going to have another crash. That's what's going to happen. That's why you need to move in the other direction and have a strong progressive tax rate and regulate Wall Street and financial institutions, because if you're going to have a game, you need referees. But no, we don't learn it. They just want to funnel more money to the rich, give more money to the military, cut programs for the middle class and the poor, and it's just a matter of time. So if you're scared, you should be, because we have so many systemic flaws in the system and a bunch of idiots in charge, corrupt idiots, who don't know they're heading into a brick wall at 1,000 miles an hour. Okay. Now, let me move on to the next one. This one is going to be specific as fuck. As part of Trump's new budget, 66 government programs are going to be eliminated. So let's go through them. We have in the Agriculture Department, $855 million will be cut. That includes the McGovern-Dole International Food for Education, Rural Business Cooperative Service, Rural Water and Waste Disposal Program Account, Single Family Housing Direct Loans. Commerce Department, $633 million cut. Economic Development Administration, Manufacturing Extension Partnership, Minority Business Development Agency, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Grants and Education. Education Department, $4.9 billion cut. 21st Century Community Learning Centers gone. Comprehensive Literacy Development Grants, forget about it. Federal Supplemental Education Opportunity Grants, no more. Impact Aid Payments for Federal Property, International Education, Strengthening Institutions, Student Support and Academic Enrichment Grants, Supporting Effective Instruction State Grants, Teacher Quality Partnership. The Energy Department, $398 million cut. That includes Advanced Research Projects Agency for energy, Advanced Technology Vehicle Manufacturing Loan Program, and Title 17 Innovative Technology Loan Guarantee Programs, Mixed Oxide Fuel Fabrication Facility, Health and Human Services, $4.8 billion cut, Agency for Health Research and Quality is part of that, Community Services Block Grant, seems kind of important, that's part of that, Health Professions and Nursing Training Programs, getting rid of that, Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program. Wow. So heat for poor people, they're getting rid of that. Homeland Security, $235 million cut. Flood Hazard Mapping and Risk Analysis Program. Because they don't give a shit about, you know, warnings for natural disasters. Transportation Security Administration Law Enforcement Grants. Housing and Urban Development, $4.1 billion cut, including Choice Neighborhoods, Community Development Block, Home Investment Partnership Program, Self-Help and Assisted Home Ownership Opportunity Program Account, Interior Department, $122 million cut, Abandoned Mine Land Grants, Heritage Partnership Program, National Wildlife Refuge Fund, Justice Department, $210 million cut, State Criminal Alien Assistance Program, Labor Department, $527 million cut, Migrant and Seasonal Farm Worker Training, OSHA Training Grant, Senior Community Service Employment Program, State Department and USAID, there's going to be about $4.3 billion cut from this. That includes development assistance, earmarked appropriations for nonprofit organizations, the Asia Foundation, East-West Center, PL 480 Title II Food Aid, State Department, USAID, and Treasury Department will cut $1.59 billion, Green Climate Fund and Global Climate Change Initiative. Transportation Department, $499 million cut. National Infrastructure Investments, gone. Treasury Department, $43 million, gone. Global Agriculture and Food Security Program. Environmental Protection Agency, $493 million, gone. Energy Star and Voluntary Climate Programs. Geographic Programs, all cut. National Aeronautics and Space Administration, $269 million, gone. Five Earth Science Missions, forget about that. Office of Education, forget about that. And then there's other independent agencies, $2.68 billion cut from here, including from the Chemical Safety Board, Corporation for National and Community Service, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Institute of Museum and Library Services, International Development Foundations, like African Development Foundation, Inter-American Foundation, Legal Services Corporation, helping poor people with legal issues, National Endowment for the Arts, National Endowment for the Humanities, Neighborhood Reinvestment Corporation, Overseas Private Investment Corporation, regional commissions, including Appalachian Regional Commission, Delta Regional Authority, Denali Commission, Northern Border Regional Commission, U.S. Institute of Peace, U.S. Trade and Development Agency. Okay, I think you get the picture. Wow. So all that's being cut. Now, here's the deal. If you want to go through it with a fine-tooth comb, kind of like we just did, but, I mean, get into even more specifics about each and individual program, are you going to come across some where, hey, maybe he's right. Maybe there's a few of these that are like, nah, I don't know why we're wasting money on that when we could be spending it on this. That's probably the case. That's probably true. However, is it the case that all of these should be eliminated as they're going to be, as he wants them to be? No, of course not. And especially that's the case when they're reallocating funds to the military. You're going to expand the military, which is already the largest military in human history, by a mile and a half. We already spend over 50% of the discretionary budget on military spending. You want to add billions and billions and billions more to the military and cut from stuff like this? No. And also, what happened, man? He said he'd never, the forgotten man would never be forgotten again. That's what Donald Trump said. What do you think this is? There are a lot of jobs that are linked to all these different agencies. Now, again, if you go through it with a fine-tooth comb, maybe some of them can be cut. But all of them? No. How many people are you affecting negatively and taking away their livelihood by going after this stuff? And how much scientific research are you gutting? And how many educational programs are you getting rid of? And how many protections for the poor are you getting rid of? And how many regulations for the EPA and for chemical safety like we went through and are you getting rid of? How many, investments or how many research operations into renewable technology are you getting rid of, which is desperately needed because of climate change? So it's basically, let me gut everything for the poor and the middle class. Let me gut everything that's educational, that's forward-looking, and let me funnel that money directly to the military-industrial complex, even though we already have 800 military bases around the world, costs $100 billion a year just to maintain it. We have waste, fraud, and abuse all throughout the military. We just did the story the other day about how there's a shadow war going on all throughout Africa that our special operations are doing. Nobody signed off on that. I didn't sign off on that. Congress didn't sign off on that. So waste billions and billions, seven different interventions going on right now. We're wasting all this money overseas maintaining the empire. $80 billion a year goes to the big banks. There's corporate welfare out the wazoo. ExxonMobil gets $4 billion a year, even though they're one of the most profitable corporations that exists. Our infrastructure gets a grade of D+. Flint, Michigan doesn't have clean water. We got all this stuff to spend the money on, and they're cutting from things that the majority of stuff they shouldn't be cutting. They just shouldn't be cutting it. So, a budget is a moral document, and this shows you that Trump and his administration and the Republicans are grossly immoral. This is a Jeb Bush budget. This is a Mitt Romney budget. This is a Marco Rubio budget. This is a George W. Bush budget. This is a Dick Cheney budget. This is their philosophy. Everything for the poor and the middle class and for research and for science and for regulation, forget about it. and give all the money to Wall Street and in the form of tax cuts too, remember, and give it in the form of corporate subsidies and funnel it again to the Pentagon. So it's inexcusable, man. It's inexcusable. I don't know how anybody could sit there and, like, there's a lot of poor people in the middle of the country who voted for Trump because they've, anti-establishment, yeah, populist, going to keep my job here. People are going to lose jobs as a result of this. And not only are people going to lose jobs, you're going to have direct negative consequences for all the gutting of regulation that you're planning on doing that's part of these programs you're eliminating. How many people in West Virginia or Kentucky are going to have their water poisoned now? There's all these issues with, it's hard to even sit down and calculate all the downsides of gutting all these programs. Again, I'm a reasonable dude. I get some of them, maybe, sure. I might agree, yeah, that one. 66 of them? Billions and billions and billions of dollars? When we're blowing billions more on shit we shouldn't be spending it on? Spare me. His budget is an absolute joke. It's a disgrace. It's disgusting. And this is further evidence of it. Do. All right, let me squeeze in one more, and then we're taking our first break here. What was I going to say? I had something to say that was not story related. Wait for it. I'm going to take a little sip of my drink skis while my mind wanders. I don't think you're allowed to do this, by the way. If you're a talk show host, you're not allowed to, like, hey, I'm just going to shut up for, like, 45 seconds and think about stuff. But we break the rules. I'm rebellious. It's not coming to me, so whatevs. So let's move on, and I'm going to do that with Trump's final story on Trump's budget here. And then when we come back from the break, forget about it. We're going to get into the crazy situation in Montana and Bernie Sanders winning all over the place and incredible. Okay. I now present to you one of my favorite headlines of all time. This is from Time Magazine. President Trump's budget includes a $2 trillion math mistake. Come on, man. That's so embarrassing. How do you do that? Like, you have, think about how stupid these guys are, because it's not like, you know, one person does the budget and then let's release it. No, it's like a whole team. It's a staff. It's a room full of advisors and so-called economists and pretend experts. But this is exactly what we mean. It's just corrupt corporate shills. Like, that's what the Republican Party is. It's a mix of, like, Kool-Aid drinking Christian fundamentalists and just 100% corrupt corporate shills. And that's not to say the Democrats are good. They're not. You know my whole spiel on that. But, like, a $2 trillion mistake? That is so goddamn embarrassing. Trump's got the four, right? Or maybe more now at this point. Goldman Sachs guys who are top economic advisors in his administration. All these jackasses are there, you know, doing the budget. Nobody's like, hey, wait a second. We had a $2 trillion mistake. Oh, that's unreal. Because they're not, you don't actually have to be smart to work at those places. It's nepotism. It's, hey, daddy was rich, now I'm part of the club. It's the country club crowd. It's the elitists. It's the people who fucking got to stick up their ass and think they're better than everybody just because they are who they are and they're part of the good sperm club. Weird phrase. But anyway, let me give you what they say here. President Trump's budget includes what critics charge is a simple accounting error that adds up to a $2 trillion oversight, though the White House said it stands by the numbers. You can't. It's not a thing. You can't do that. Under the proposed budget released Tuesday, the Trump administration's proposed tax cuts would boost economic growth enough to pay for $2 trillion in spending by 2027, but the tax cuts are also supposed to be revenue neutral, meaning that money is already supposed to pay for the revenue lost from the tax cuts. Oh my God, you're so stupid. Oh, how did you not catch that? That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. Ugh. Guys, let me explain something to you about trickle-down economics. It's the dumbest shit that's ever been thought of. So, it's so stupid. Get this. How's this for a little historical fact? It's so stupid that George H.W. Bush called it voodoo economics. He's a Republican. But you're thinking, well, how the fuck could he call it voodoo economics? I don't understand what he means. Because even he looked at it and he said, that makes no goddamn sense. Because what they say is, what we're going to do is cut taxes for the rich massively and reduce the deficit. Wait. A fucking grade schooler could see that makes no sense. Why? If you cut taxes for the rich, if you cut taxes for anybody, you are, by definition, giving less revenue to the government. You just cut the rate that the government is taking in taxes. So you're, by definition, taking less money into the government. So how are you going to reduce the deficit when you're taking in less money? That makes no sense. The opposite is going to happen. You're going to explode the deficit. That's what's going to happen. Now they say, well, we cut spending along with that. Sometimes they say that. But they never cut spending the equal amount that they cut taxes. It's never, and if they were to do, it's not even possible to do that, because then basically what they'd have to do is cut everything 100%, completely get rid of it, except for the military. That's what ultimately what they'd want to do. No social safety net, no programs for the middle class or the poor, no nothing, no infrastructure and all that. Just, hey, money for the military. So the math never works. Every time we've done trickle-down economics, deregulation and cut taxes for the rich, the deficit explodes. It's a historical fact. Look at what Reagan left us with. George W. Bush left us with historic deficits. When he left office, it was a $1.4 trillion deficit. So, you know how they wiggle their way out of this? I'm not kidding. You're going to laugh at this because people don't, a lot of people don't, and the media certainly doesn't, really evaluate the arguments that come from the right. But when you stop and do it, it is, quite literally laughable. I remember laughing the first time I heard what their response was to the point I just made. Like, okay, hey, you cut taxes, that is by definition going to limit revenue to the government, so what do you mean you're going to reduce the deficit? You would need more revenue to reduce the deficit. You know what they say? No, it's okay, because when we cut taxes for the rich, it will unleash the beast of the private sector, and the magic of capitalism will work, and there will be so many more jobs created, and the economy will boom so much that even though the rich are paying a lower tax rate, as a raw number, it will be more taxes that go into the government. But that doesn't happen. Every time we've done trickle-down economics, the opposite happens. You have less revenue going into the government. And even if you have a brief flicker of a few years where there's more revenue, even though it's a lower tax rate, it gets worse because it's a boom-bust cycle. Everything takes off and then everything crashes because it's not real growth. It's fueled by speculation and the lack of regulation, which led to crazy investments that were casino capitalist investments that eventually backfire. So my point is this. Even without the obvious grotesque $2 trillion mistake that they made in their budget, even without that, their budget still wouldn't make sense and the numbers still wouldn't work. Because the core argument in their budget is, no, seriously, this time, when we do trickle-down economics and cut taxes for the rich and deregulate, we're going to get more revenue because it's going to explode the beast of the economy. You all are so fucking stupid. But it's not even necessarily that they're stupid. I mean, they are stupid. But it's more that they don't care because it's about getting more money to their corporate buddies. If you have Goldman Sachs guys running your economic policy, what are they doing? They're just trying to bias the laws in favor of... get their basic math right. Never mind the fact that the entire theory their budget math is based on is incorrect.
Okay.
Okay, let me take a break. When we come back, a Bernie Sanders delegate won an election. And then we're going to get into what happened in Montana. I know you guys are probably itching to get to that story. Don't worry, it's all coming up. It's all coming up. Sit tight. We'll be right back. Today. Don't know why. It's either Blog Talk Radio fucking up or I don't know if the weather might have something to do with it, but it's super shitty weather here in New York, so I heard there was interference on the call. I wonder if imagine you're getting, like, police walkie-talkies in the middle of the show. That'd be weird. Anyway, all right, let's talk about how Bernie Sanders is winning, and it is tremendous. Believe me, let me just tell you. A Bernie Sanders delegate won a New York State election in a Trump district. How about that? Democrat Christine Pellegrino has defeated her Republican challenger in a New York State special election just months after the district went big for Donald Trump in the 2016 presidential race. Pellegrino, a delegate for Senator Bernie Sanders during the Democratic presidential primary, defeated Republican challenger Thomas Gargiulo in the District 9 State Assembly special election. Some Democrats applauded the win on Twitter to warn Republicans that their unified control of the federal government is at risk in the 2018 midterm elections. The race represents another victory for Democrats who are looking for wins in state races and House special elections in Georgia and Montana as proof that an anti-Trump backlash is building. Okay, so this is great news, but I have a dire warning for everybody. I read like 3 or 4 different articles on this, and I sent the theme. The theme was, in most cases, they frame everything as simply an anti-Trump backlash, full stop. Now, the article in The Hill was, you know, kind enough to bring up the fact that this isn't just a Democrat, this is a Bernie Sanders-style Democrat who was a Bernie Sanders delegate, and it's somebody who's on the populist left. Some of the articles didn't even bring that up. And what some of the articles did is they would show tweets from these corporate Democrats in Congress who were like, oh, look out, Donnie. We're coming for you in 2018. The Democratic Party is so unified, and we're going to come take this country back. No. It's not just an anti-Trump backlash. The people who are winning are Bernie Sanders-style Democrats. They are on the populist left. They are not corporate Democrats. The corporate Democrats have repeatedly gotten their ass handed to them by the fake populists on the right, like Donald Trump. Hillary lost to Trump. The Republicans hold the House of Representatives, the Senate, the majority of state legislatures, and the majority of governorships. So they hold everything when their opponent is a corporate Democrat. But when you have the populist left on the ballot, when you have Bernie Sanders-style Democrats, well, then the Bernie Sanders-style Democrat wins, of course. But then you have corporate Democrats try to co-opt the movement and say, yes, this is an anti-Trump backlash. That's what this is. It's not just an anti-Trump backlash. The anti-Trump backlash could have came when Trump was literally on the fucking ballot, but it didn't. There was a revolution on the side of Donald Trump and the Republicans. So for them to just say it's an anti-Trump backlash is incredibly misleading, because what they want to do is jump in front of the parade with Bernie Sanders-style progressives winning. And this is why I've said repeatedly now, Bernie is making a mistake by doing this unity tour with Tom Perez. Now, don't get me wrong. Am I against it no matter what? Get away, Bernie. No. I would just have conditions. Here's my condition. Oh, you want me to do a unity tour with you, Tom Perez? The DNC literally just voted to keep taking corporate money. That just happened. It just happened. You want me to do a unity tour with you? Let's, reconvene with people in the DNC. We'll do another vote, and we get rid of the corporate money right now. Or maybe Tom Perez even has the ability and the authority as the head of the DNC to just say, yeah, I'm deciding we're not going to take it. I don't care how everybody voted. I'm just going to decide we're not taking it. Because nobody fucking trusts you when you take corporate money. That means you are by definition corrupt, because you are going to do the bidding of those corporations who give you the money. So if Bernie wanted to do a unity tour, thing number one is you guys have to stop taking corporate money. But they didn't stop taking corporate money. So I would say, then I'm not doing a unity tour with you. If we can't agree on issue number one, which is that this party is corrupted by corporate money, then I'm not going to do a fucking, why would I do a unity tour with you? I don't agree with you. If you want to unify, unify behind me. I'm the most popular politician in America, literally. Bernie has a 61% favorability rating. Meanwhile, the other wing of the Democratic Party, led by the likes of Hillary Clinton, she has a 35% approval rating. 35%, 61%, 35%, 61%. Who should we be listening to? And you got to get the whole party on board with Medicare for All, for example. This stuff isn't difficult, man. But the Democrats and the DNC, they're so corrupted by corporate money that they can't see straight and they can't fight for the right policies. And now that you have real populists winning, populist left people winning, Bernie Sanders-style progressives winning, they want to come out there and take credit and use them as a mascot. Like, oh, yeah, we got Bernie Sanders-style progressives winning, but we're unified, right? Right? There's real unity among the actual left. These guys are not the actual left, the corporate Democrats. They can go take a fucking hike. You want to talk about unity? Like I said, we unify behind Bernie Sanders' platform. That's what we unify behind. And there is unity, and it's continuing to grow among, for example, Democratic Socialists and Greens and Left Independents and Justice Democrats and Brand New Congress and National Nurses United and Our Revolution. That's where the real unity is happening. People who actually agree on the fundamental issues, but typically have a different approach. Some people want to go outside of the two-party establishment. Some people want to try to reform from within. So we can have tactical differences, and that's fine. That's, you know, a free country. That's what it's all about. But the fact of the matter is we agree on Medicare for All. We agree on a living wage. We agree on free college. You know, we agree on ending the drug war. We agree on ending the wars. So that's where the real unity is happening. But when all of us do the hard work, when all of us do the organizing, when all of us get the grassroots involved, they want to turn around and frame it as just not that real populist leftists are winning. They want to frame it as anti-Trump backlash. So we're part of this, right? No, you're not, corporate Democrats. You're the problem. We're the solution. So I was just about to steal from The Rock. I was about to say, know your role and shut your mouth. But you really should, because you're the problem in the party, and you had your crack at it. You had your crack at it. You were up at bat just in the last election, and guess what? You struck out immediately. So we're the answer. You're the problem. We're going to need you to step aside and stop co-opting the movement, because it's not going to work. Like, they think, like, oh, we'll just, you know, throw up a fake populist, a fake progressive in the next election, and everybody will fall in line and vote for him. No. Well, Tim Kaine would be great, wouldn't he? Wouldn't Cory Booker be fantastic? Let's go in that direction. No. No momentum at all. Those guys are a house of cards. Only the establishment and corporations love those jackasses. You need real progressives. That's what we need. And what have I warned you about and told you about from the beginning? It wasn't a warning. It was something to celebrate. That when the option is right-winger or populist left, people will always go populist left. Now, how do I know that? It's in the fucking polling. They agree with us on the issues. So if you have somebody who's populist left who really believes in these things and they argue for it, then their populist left is going to win every time. But what happened was we had a corporate Democrat in the last election versus a fake populist on the right. And the fake populist on the right won because he did sometimes the language of populism. But when you have a fake populist on the right versus an actual populist on the actual populist on the left will always win. That's the way it works. And again, it's in the polling. So we have the answer. They're the problem. And the proof is in the pudding. We always win. You guys always lose. So the direction we're going to go in is ours. And you can step the fuck aside and stop pretending like this is just an anti-Trump backlash, because it's certainly not some sort of a wave in favor of corporate Democrats. Okay. Now, here we go, Montana. I know. People are probably thinking I should open with this story. For the few of you who don't know what happened in Montana, man, you're going to fucking love this story. Holy shit. You're going to be like, no, this can't be real. Oh, it's real as a heart attack. Okay. You guys know how I always... Blah, blah, blah. Do you guys know how I always bring up that movie, The Campaign, with Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis? And I do it because sometimes I feel like we're living in it because we have such a crazy political landscape. I mean, Donald Trump is president. What the fuck is that? Al Franken's a senator. I mean, the list goes on and on. And that's, by the way, not... Al's actually not that bad. So, and certainly not as bad as Donald Trump. So I feel weird putting them together. But I think you get the point. Is like, it's almost like, is this real life with the things that happen in our political landscape? Well, today, I mean, it's... This is the best example I've seen yet, that we really are approaching the campaign-level absurdity in our political process. Look at this headline. On eve of election, Montana GOP candidate charged with assault on reporter. this close to that, what actually happened in the campaign of like, whoops. Punched a baby. What are you going to do? You assaulted a reporter on the day before the election. You must be the dumbest motherfucker on the planet. Who does that? Oh my God, who does that? Okay. So this is a special election in Missouri. Or excuse me, Montana. I just told you it's Montana. For Congress. There's a guy named Rob Quist, who's a Democrat, and he's up against Greg Gianforte. Now, Gianforte is a billionaire Republican, and he's out of touch. If I'm not mistaken, I think he just lost a race to be governor in the election where Trump swept everything. Trump swept everything. He lost. So, wowzers on that one. Not really the best politician, clearly. Now, he's in Montana, which is deep red country, and it's like he's trying everything he can to lose the election. Punches a reporter! So, we don't have video yet. There might be video. According to the initial reports, they say there was a local camera crew there, but they might not have set up the camera in time, so I don't know. But what we do have is audio. And the audio is amazing. Let me play it for you, and I'm going to come back and describe what all the eyewitnesses, and there were many eyewitnesses, what they all saw. Let's watch.
And what we'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious.
Okay, speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
I'm sick and tired of you guys. The last time you came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
You, the last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hell out of here, I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you gotta leave.
He just body slammed me.
You gotta leave.
Oh my God. So... he was asking him about the new CBO report out on Trump Care, which found that I think it's 23 million people are going to lose their health insurance under it. And the guy's just fucking caught stone dead, has no answer, no response, no political spin, because this guy's in favor of repealing Obamacare and he's in favor of Trump Care. So they're like, okay, you're in favor of it. Well, 23 million people are going to lose their insurance. Your thoughts? And they go, no, get the hell out of here. Why do you guys always do this? Look, ambush me. So his team said, oh, the reporter grabbed his arm. Everybody in the room, including Fox News reporters, are like, that is not true. That's not even close to true. Not at all. And they say, well, no, he had the recorder thing, and he put it, like, up to him. Yeah, that's what every reporter does ever. There's pictures out there of every politician you can think of, right-wing, left-wing, whatever, Bernie Sanders, Ted Cruz, everybody in between, with reporters holding their fucking thing up so that they, you know, record what the politician is saying. Not once has one of them said, oh, get the hell out of here, and then fucking body slammed him. He broke his glasses. And they also say, all the eyewitnesses say, they say there was no sign whatsoever of aggression from Ben Jacobs, the reporter, none. So the guy fucking body slams him, breaks his glasses, and then punches him. He punches him. That is the clearest case of assault I think I've ever seen in my entire life, ever. Now get this. At first, they didn't arrest them. People start digging. What did they find? The sheriff donated $250 to John Forte's campaign. But eventually, they did. They charged him. They charged him with assault. I think it was misdemeanor assault. But how wild is that, man? On the eve of a special election, when you're the Republican candidate who's favored to win, but, like, they even admit, his campaign admitted a little while back, this race is closer than we want it to be. This is too close for comfort. You're going to body slam a reporter? And by the way, the Republicans on Twitter, the far right crowd, hilarious the way they're trying to rationalize this. And they're like, well, he was a British reporter. So it's okay to do assault if the person's British. That's a new one. Never heard of that one before. There were other ones who were like, yeah, well, you know, why doesn't the media care about, like, when the left wing does violence? They can't bring themselves to say the obvious. This is the same crowd, by the way, that loves to say, free speech, free speech, free speech, First Amendment, free expression. I mean, what? Yeah, come on. I mean, the left wing social justice warriors on college campuses are worse. But if a Republican politician assaults a reporter, I mean, that's exactly against a free and open press and free speech and free expression in the First Amendment. Well, then they're like, well, it's, come on, shit happens. What are we going to do? Let's move along. Come on, forget about it. Not a big deal. Talk about left-wing violence. Left-wing violence is... I mean, come on. He was British. I mean, what are you going to do? He's a fucking British guy in your face. You're going to body slam him. That's what happens. Oh, God, this is crazy. This is so fucking crazy. So we'll see what happens. You know what the crazy part is? Can anybody say with total confidence that this guy's definitely going to lose? I certainly can't. Why? Well, look at what happened with Trump. Trump was caught something that in the 90s would have tanked him immediately, in the 80s would have tanked him immediately, in the early 2000s it would have tanked him immediately. When he was caught saying, you know, he was trying to fuck somebody. This is while he was with Melania. Talking about trying to fuck this star, and then I grab him by the pussy, I don't even wait. That tape would have said, but okay, even if you put that one aside, like, okay, questionable comments on sex, what about the fact that Trump was on Fox and Friends, and he said on live TV, we have to take out their families, talking about terrorist families. So, like, let's kill civilians on purpose in the Middle East. That's like the definition of terrorism. Kill civilians for a political reason. That is terrorism. Trump said, I want to be a terrorist on TV, and he won the election. And no, but the media didn't even flip out about that one. It's not like CNN and MSNBC ran that clip and were like, oh, my God, look at what he said. You're saying whatever. So is it possible that people will look at a body slam of a reporter and go, yeah, he's standing up to the establishment and the fake news? Yeah, that's fucking possible. That's absolutely possible. So we'll see. I don't know. You know, maybe he loses and he loses because of this and a mix of all the other factors. And, you know, Rob Quist has run a decent campaign, but not a perfect campaign. Is it possible he wins despite what he did? Yes. But I'll be very interested to see the results here. We're living in the movie The Campaign. Body slamming a reporter asking you a tough question a day before your election. What the fuck? Okay. Next. Let's talk a little bit about single payer. So guess what? You guys have been making noise, and the Democrats in Washington are hearing you, and they're fearful, which is exactly what we want. There's a great, I think it was in a Michael Moore, one of his movies, it might have been on Sicko, the one about healthcare, where he had a line, in the U.S., the people are scared of the politicians. In France, the politicians are scared of the people. Well, because of how active you're getting at the grassroots level and how you're calling your congresspeople and you're signing petitions and you're marching and you're getting involved, as a result of that, they're like, whoa, we have to try to, like, appease the grassroots. Now, how do they go about doing that? By buckling on things that you want, proposals you have. When you say Medicare for All or that's it, or we're going to vote you out, not, you put a lot of them in a corner, and they're like, okay, we'll do it. So that's how it should be. There were 72 co-sponsors of H.R. 676, which is John Conyers' Medicare for All bill. Now there's 111, all because of the pressure you're putting on them. This is all you. You built that. But look at this. Now there's an article that dives into it. Dem lawmakers call for single-payer health care. A group of House Democrats called Wednesday for single-payer Medicare for All health care insurance system amid Republicans' Obamacare repeal push. The roughly half a dozen Democrats were led by Representative John Conyers, the longest-serving member of the House, who has for years sponsored legislation to create a single-payer health care system that would see the government provide health insurance for everyone. The lawmakers attacked Republican efforts to repeal Obamacare, but argued that the country also needs to go further than the current health law. We can fight fiercely to protect the Affordable Care Act and also look a little bit further in terms of establishing Medicare for All, Representative Keith Ellison, a high-profile single-payer advocate and vice chairman of the Democratic National Committee, said at the press conference. Conyers touted that his Medicare for All bill now has the most co-sponsors it has ever had, with 111 lawmakers, more than half of the House Democratic Caucus. The chairman of the House Democratic Caucus, Representative Joseph Crowley, joined as a co-sponsor of the bill earlier this week. Let me pause. You want to know why Joseph Crowley came out in support of Medicare for All? Because of you, Justice Democrat. We're running Alex Ocasio-Cortez against him. She's a fire breather, a Bernie Sanders supporter, coming up from Joe Crowley's left. Joe Crowley is one of the most corporate of corporate Democrats. Joe Crowley left during a debate session on Wall Street regulation to go raise money from Wall Street. Then he came back and voted in favor of Wall Street and against regulating them. He voted for the war in Iraq. He supported intervention in Libya. He's a corporatist among corporatists. We covered him the other day when we were launching Alex Ocasio-Cortez. So Alex comes up and says, I'm for Medicare for All, and I'm not going to compromise on that, and I'm going to push for it. And I'm for a new deal, and I'm for progressive priorities. And I don't take corporate money, and I don't take PAC money. I'm a Justice Democrat. And Representative Crowley goes, testing the political winds. Yeah, I'm totally in favor of Medicare for All. See, here's the thing. Is this a good thing? Yeah. He's saying, oh, I'm going to sign on for Medicare for All. But guess what? I don't believe him. Do you believe him? This guy built a career on being a corporatist. He's just doing this to save his ass. If the Democrats were to get a supermajority and it were to come down to Joe Crowley's vote to give us Medicare for All, would you trust Joe Crowley? When he has a history of voting against Wall Street regulation, he has a history of taking corporate money, he has a history of selling people out, making the wrong decision at the wrong times, I wouldn't trust him. So why not get rid of Joe Crowley and put in Alex Ocasio-Cortez? That's what you got. And by the way, you can go to justicedemocrats.com/donate, and it goes to all of our candidates. It goes to Paula Swearingen, Cori Bush, Alex Ocasio-Cortez, Adrienne Bell. For the purposes of this segment, I'll leave Alex Ocasio-Cortez's information right on the screen here. So, but the point is, you're forcing them to the right position. Again, I don't trust Joe Crowley. I don't trust him at all. So he's just saying this because he knows if I don't say this, I'm going to fucking lose. He knows that. So now he's mimicking the language of progressives more. But when push comes to shove, I don't believe him. So still, vote for Alex Ocasio-Cortez because we know she means it. But there you go. You're moving him. Okay. Let me continue. I've never seen more energy behind this issue of Medicare for All, Conyers said. Again, because of you guys. He noted that even under Obamacare, 10% of the public is still uninsured, saying the status quo is not enough. But House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi has said that the time has not yet come for a push for single payer on the national level. Quote, the comfort level with a broader base of the American people is not there yet, Pelosi said at a press conference earlier this month. It doesn't mean it couldn't be. States are a good place to start. So let me break down what she's saying there. She's going, no, single payer, don't be crazy. And she goes on to say, oh, believe me, I'm in support of single payer. I mean, that's why I was holding up signs that said single payer before many of you were born. That's what she says. Well, you have a weird way of showing that you're for single payer, Nancy Pelosi, by not being for single payer. Yeah, I'm for it, but. No, but. Are you for it or are you against it? You're against it. You haven't signed on to H.R. 676. Spare me your line of bullshit. I supported it back in 1978. I don't give a fuck. Do you support it right now, yes or no? What she's saying is, no, forget single payer. Come on. What we got to do is, we got to do, like, you know, baby steps. Let's go to at the state level. Let's do a public option at the state level. The fuck is that, man? She's not even calling for single payer in each individual state. Because a federal law that mandates single payer everywhere is perfectly fine. I'd accept that as a compromise because then everybody has single payer. But no, she's saying, let's do a public option. So water down single payer at the federal level and then, okay, put it at the state level and then water it down further and do a public option. Fuck you, Nancy Pelosi. Corporate Democrat sellout liar. Why do I say she's a liar? Because what she said there is not correct in any way. The comfort level with the broader base of the American people is not there yet, she said about single payer. You're a liar. Poll just came out from Pew. 60% support. Not only is the comfort level there, Nancy, the comfort level is there. It's been there for a while. A year ago, it was at 55%. Now it's at 60%. That is a super strong majority. That is a landslide in favor of Medicare for All. And either you're ignorant and you don't know the polls, even though you're a politician and your job is to represent the will of the people, kind of hard to do when you don't know the will of the people, either you're ignorant or you're a liar. You tell me which one it is. Should I go through your donor list? Should I go see if there's health insurance companies that are donating to you? Maybe I should go take a look. Maybe I should go see if there's any, if Big Pharma is giving you money or if any, corporate donors in this field are giving you money. I know you take corporate money, but are you taking corporate money in this field? Because then you'd be a liar. Because you know that Medicare for All is polling well over 50%. And you're the people aren't there yet. Yeah, I'm sure, by the way. If a poll came out tomorrow that said 92% of the American people support Medicare for All, she still wouldn't be in favor of it. If you have 60%, she wouldn't be in favor of it. 90%, I don't know, reason, stuff, things, leave me alone. You're a joke. You're an absolute joke. Nancy Pelosi is a goddamn joke. That's what you're not a leader. Leader my ass cheeks. Fucking leader of the Democratic Party. If you're the leader, no wonder we got fucking wiped out everywhere. Look at you with your double speak. Yeah, I support Medicare for All. I was holding up signs when you were babies. You have a weird way of showing you support it by not supporting it. This is the dodge that so many of the Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You know, if the time were right and we had the numbers, and in theory and philosophically, theoretically, I would kind of support single payer if we blank slate and blah, 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 blah. All of that is bullshit. You support something by supporting it. Could you imagine somebody said that during the civil rights movement? You know, look, I would, in theory, hypothetically, support it if the time was right and we had the numbers, but we don't have the numbers, so it can't do the thing that would make sense. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said the time is always right to do what's right. The time is always right to do what's right. It's one of my favorite quotes of all time. Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Nancy Pelosi and all the corporate Democrats say, the time is wrong to do what's right. What? We don't have the numbers, so I'm not for it. We don't have the numbers, so we can't end segregation. We don't have the numbers. We don't have the numbers yet, so we can't be in favor of women's suffrage. We can't be in favor of women having the right to vote. The fuck is that? What is that? That makes no sense. It's the fucking dumbest thing I've ever heard. Either something is the right thing to do or it's the wrong thing to do. It doesn't matter. Test the fucking winds on it. Get the fuck out of here, man. Come on. This is single-payer Medicare for All. And even putting all that aside, it is popular. It is the right thing to do, and most people agree. So even with your fucking shitty test of, whole, my support is contingent upon how people are leaning. Well, okay, people are leaning in favor of it. They are a joke. They don't stand on principle, and they don't want to represent the people. So what's left? If you're not representing the people and you're not standing on principle, what are you doing? Perhaps you're representing your donors because you're a bunch of sellouts. Okay. All right, let's go to the media here, because boy, do I have a story for you. I have some bad news here for the media. Their credibility is apparently incredibly low. People just aren't buying what they're selling anymore. So this is from The Hill. Here's what they say. Nearly two-thirds of Americans say the mainstream press is full of fake news, a sentiment that is held by a majority of voters across the ideological spectrum. According to data from the latest Harvard-Harris poll, which was provided exclusively to The Hill, 65% of voters believe there is a lot of fake news in the mainstream media. That number includes 80% of Republicans, 60% of independents, and 53% of Democrats. 84% of voters said it is hard to know what news to believe online. So I showed you that last part there because it's everywhere. It's everywhere. People are like, I don't know if I believe that. I don't know if I believe that. I don't know if I believe this. And they're not wrong. And what's so pathetic is how smug corporate media is and how they, like, assume when Trump attacks them, like, oh! How dare you? You've attacked an honorable staple of American democracy, and now the people will stand up in our favor, the good media elitists. No, people know you're full of shit, so a lot of people actually like it when he attacks you, even though he's a buffoon. When he goes, fake news, fake news, fake news, the people in the media are like, ah, look, what a fool of himself he's making. But the corporate media, these are the same people who got us into the war in Iraq. They did the propaganda for the Bush administration. They said Saddam did 9/11, then Saddam has weapons of mass destruction. They really do fake news all the time. They cover the wrong, they put their focus on the wrong shit all the time. They lost it because Donald Trump cursed. He breached decorum. Let's talk about this for 3 days straight. So people don't like mainstream media. And a lot of people in mainstream media would argue, well, that's just because the people are irrational. But that's not true. When you give people the option of an honest actor, they love the honest actor. Bernie Sanders has a 61% favorability rating. He's the most popular politician in the country. Because people look at it, they go, oh, he's honest and he cares about stuff. If the media was honest and they cared about stuff, cared about telling the truth for the American people, cared about educating them about which policies make sense, stopped all their stupid biases, whether it's a Republican Party bias, a Democratic Party bias, or an establishment bias for both parties. So it's not like woven into the fabric of nature that the American people are going to hate the media. They hate the media because the media sucks. You suck. All you do is talk about menial nonsense, garbage shit. So when was the last time you saw a really detailed piece on CNN covering how half the country makes $30,000 a year or less? When was the last time you saw a really in-depth report about how our infrastructure gets a grade of D+? When was the last time you saw a really in-depth report about our 800 military bases around the world that costs $100 billion a year to maintain? When was the last time you saw a really in-depth report about the extent of the torture that we did at Guantanamo Bay and at Abu Ghraib, and how Dick Cheney and George Bush signed off on it, and how we copied from a communist Chinese manual on how to torture? When was the last time you saw really serious coverage about serious issues that are affecting regular people? Has there ever been a documentary on the 45,000 people that die as a result of not having basic health care in America, when that number is zero in every other modern nation? they don't cover. If the media covered those things, their favorability rate would be 95%. People would be like, oh, I love them. What are you talking about? They're a watchdog for people of power. They're looking out for me, the regular guy, the little guy. I love them. What are you talking about? But they don't do that. They don't do that at all. They're fucking partisan hacks. They're establishment pricks. And as a result of it, see, that's the thing. You've destroyed your credibility so thoroughly that when a monster like Donald Trump comes along and he goes, fake news, fake news, they go, yeah, it's true, isn't it? I mean, come on, they are fake news. And you have nobody to blame but yourself for that. Donald Trump is a monster. Donald Trump is a buffoon. Donald Trump is a clown. Donald Trump is authoritarian. He's all those things. But you also suck at your fucking job. So you've given him credibility from all the lies you've told and all the misleading bullshit and all the focus on irrational things that you shouldn't be focusing on. You gave him ammunition. So when he says fake news, fake news, fake news, people go, I kind of like that he's anti-establishment and he's going against these, you know, snobby pricks who think they're great and they suck. So, and again, look, on the internet, we got a lot of work to do too. I unfortunately think there's, you know, the internet is so large and it's such a spectrum that it includes stuff from InfoWars and WorldNet Daily, who literally believe Obama is a demon and the Sandy Hook massacre was a hoax to take the guns. They just believe preposterous things. So the internet includes stuff like that to stuff like us, independent progressive media, where, yes, we have an opinion, but we also give you the facts and then I give you my take on it. And hopefully we're building up trust in a way where, you know that we're always going to give you the straight dope. But overall on the internet, yeah, 84% say, I don't know what to believe online, because it's true, you can find contradicting stuff online. But I do think overall new media is the answer to this old media domination, and you guys are making that happen. You guys are the grassroots. You guys fund this show and keep this show going. You're the main source of revenue for this show, you guys. On patreon.com/secular talk, you give $2 a month. If you want to go nuts, $5 or $7 a month. And that keeps us going. That keeps us free and independent. That keeps us pumping out content that we hope is quality and that you guys enjoy. And it's not just me. Of course, it's all the other progressive independent outlets who are doing their thing. And we couldn't do it without you guys. But it's so clear that there's a vacuum in the marketplace. It's not that we're so great. It's that there's this fucking vacuum in the marketplace for anything that's real because corporate media is so goddamn bad that everybody's on to them. It doesn't matter where you fall on the political spectrum. Everybody's like, that's some bullshit. Wolf Blitzer, Don Lemon, fucking Sean Hannity, Greta Van Susteren, you know, you name it. People on MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, they're all silly. So since you're on to them, you're looking for an alternative, and we're trying our best to be that alternative. Okay. All right, now we're going to go to science. Let's talk about science. So actual people, regular human beings, are in agreement with science. This is a nice development here. 8 in 10 people see climate change as a catastrophic risk. Nearly 9 in 10 people say they're ready to make changes to their standard of living if it would prevent future climate catastrophe, a survey on global threats found Wednesday. The survey of more than 8,000 people in 8 countries, the United States, China, India, Britain, Australia, Brazil, South Africa, and Germany, found that 84% of people now consider climate change a global catastrophic risk. That puts worry about climate change only slightly behind fears about large-scale environmental damage and the threat of politically motivated violence escalating into war. According to the Global Challenges Foundation, which commissioned the Global Catastrophic Risks 2017 report, but it indicates that many people now see climate change as a bigger threat than other traditional or rising concerns, such as epidemics, population growth, use of weapons of mass destruction, and the rise of artificial intelligence threats. Whoa. So look at that, man. Climate change is now right there alongside epidemics, population growth, weapons of mass destruction, and AI in terms of what people go, whew. Man, we got a bleak future. So isn't it amazing how governments just totally ignore and disregard the people on this? But that's how you know special interests really run the show. Because it's 84% of people are like, oh my God, climate change, catastrophe. Do something and do it now. Let's go in the other direction. We got to get off of fossil fuels. We have to do it. We have to move towards green technology, renewable technology. Wind, solar, all of it. Come on, we got to do it. We don't have a choice. We don't have a choice for the future of humanity. 84% of people in the government's like, even though it's a giant economic opportunity as well, where do you think the next boom is going to come from? Like, you had a whole new industry blossom, like with the internet revolution, boom, a whole new industry came out of nowhere. So many jobs were created. Oh my God, look at this. Well, the next one is going to be in renewable technology and green technology. We're going to have to find a way to retool where we get our energy from. That's huge. But no, we view it, in the U.S., we view it as, oh, no, that's bad for the economy. Why? Because you're going against the status quo. The status quo are the oil companies, and the oil companies bought the government. So the special interests have a lockdown. And isn't it interesting how even with the terrible job that the media is doing on this issue, because all they do, Fox News, they don't believe in climate science. It's a hoax. MSNBC, okay, they believe in it. They don't cover it that much, but they believe in it. CNN, debatable. Yeah, some people say it's happening, some people say it's not happening here. Let's have Bill Nye the Science Guy versus a congresswoman on this. So one debates it. The other one doesn't believe in it. The other one believes in it. It's like, okay, people don't – how the fuck are you going to know what to believe if people don't know any better and they're watching traditional media? Well, still, somehow – 84% of people, not just in the U.S., but all over, they've caught on to it. And they're like, oh, whoa, 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 what are we doing? This is a huge problem, and we have to act on it. So even with a shitty job of people being educated, they're onto it. They're onto it. And that says something. But now it's just a matter of getting the money out of the system and so that we can really tackle this problem in a serious way, because you're not going to be able to tackle it in a serious way as long as the oil companies have a stranglehold on not just our government, but governments the world over. So we have to retool the way we do stuff. The people know that. The media is not accurately covering that, and the governments are lagging behind and not being responsive to the needs and wants of the people. Okay. Let's go to our military. Let's check in on our military and see what's up. This is from Newsweek. U.S. Army lost track of where they put $1 billion in weapons and arms transfers in Iraq and Kuwait. Well, that's lovely. The U.S. Army failed to properly monitor more than $1 billion worth of arms transfers in Iraq and Kuwait, according to a declassified government audit obtained by Amnesty International released Wednesday. This audit provides a worrying insight into the U.S. Army's flawed and potentially dangerous system for controlling millions of dollars worth of arms transfers to a hugely volatile region, Patrick Wilkin, Amnesty International arms control and human rights researcher, said in a statement. Amnesty obtained the documents through Freedom of Information Law requests. The group's research documents lacks controls and record keeping within the Iraqi chain of command, which has resulted in arms manufactured in the U.S. and other countries winding up in the hands of armed groups known to be committing war crimes and other atrocities such as the Islamic State militant group ISIS. Wow. So what they're saying is, yeah, we lost about $1 billion worth of weapons, and a lot of it probably went to ISIS. That's what that means. Allow me to take the controversial position on this. I don't think they care. I don't think they care. They frame it as like Amnesty International is like, whoa, guys, hey, hold on now. This is like a huge problem. Let's tell the government about it because, gosh golly, if we tell the government about it, they're obviously going to act immediately and fix it. Nah, son. Nah, son. That's not how it works. What we have in the U.S. is a military-industrial complex, which means that so-called defense contractors pay the government. They pay politicians to run their campaigns, and then they pass bills that allow these companies to get way more contracts and way more money than they need or they deserve. So what we do is we build arms and we build weapons, we build tanks, we build fighter jets, we build all that, just nonstop, pump it out. And then we don't know what to do with it. So sometimes it sits in tanks sitting in Nevada desert for years and years and years. But usually what we do is, I don't know, sell the weapons to Egypt, who's a giant human rights violator, and Sisi recently killed peaceful protesters about a year or two ago. Fund, give it to Sisi so we can do an authoritarian crackdown. Give it to Netanyahu so we can massacre innocent Palestinian babies. Give it to Saudi Arabia and they'll bomb Yemen to smithereens. Give the arms and the weapons to the most authoritarian regimes on the planet and pretend like we believe in freedom and democracy at the same time. And, hey, we have such a surplus of it that, whoops, look at that. We were trying to give the weapons to Iraq and Kuwait, which is bad enough, by the way, even if it went in the hands it was supposed to go into, still bad enough. Whoops, but what are we going to do? We lost it, and it turns out it ended up in the hands of ISIS. Now, again, you go, well, come on, they're not, like, in favor of that. Well, you know, we're very strongly against the Assad government in Syria, and who's fighting Assad? Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And a lot of them, yes, happen to end up getting American weapons. Sometimes it's through a proxy, through Turkey or through Saudi Arabia or a Gulf state. You know, sometimes that happens. And sometimes, whoops, you lose $1 billion worth of weapons, and it just happens to end up in the hands of ISIS. Sometimes that, too. So this is a ruse. That's what it is. They don't care. They don't give a shit. Petraeus fucking floated the idea openly. Hey, let's arm Al-Qaeda. So why would we be surprised that, ooh, look at that, some ISIS happened to get some of our weapons. What are we to do? It's all about the business. It's all about the money. They don't care about the consequences because they really don't believe that those consequences are going to come back around and get us. And they're idiots for not believing that, but that's what they believe. You know, we created bin Laden. We armed and funded the Mujahideen to fight the big bad Soviet Union. The Mujahideen eventually split up and became the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Osama bin Laden. There were articles written in Western newspapers calling him a freedom fighter. There's pictures of the Taliban in the White House with Ronald Reagan. So, you know, sorry to pop your bubble if you're some sort of noob, as the kids would say, to politics, but that's what's going on. You know, we lost gave $1 billion worth of arms to jihadists and Islamists, and we're going to go, oops, we'll try our hardest to make sure that doesn't happen again. Okay. All right, next. Got two more, and we'll squeeze them in, and then we'll call it a day skis. Senator Rand Paul is taking a stand against unfortunate bipartisan consensus on foreign policy. So this is from CNN. They say, Senator Rand Paul intends to force a vote in the Senate on the $110 billion arms deal to Saudi Arabia that President Donald Trump announced during his visit there, to a Paul aide told CNN. That seems like a little bit of a typo or whatever. Anyway, Paul is expected to introduce a measure to disapprove of the sale later this week, and he has the ability under Senate rules to eventually force a vote on it. The Kentucky Republican is concerned that giving more arms to Saudi Arabia would drag the U.S. further into the Saudi-led war in Yemen and worsen the humanitarian situation there. Paul did the same thing for a $1.15 billion Saudi arms deal last year that was approved by the Obama administration. His effort was rejected 26-71. Wow. Look at that. 71 members of Congress, of the Senate, I should say, were like, yeah, let's arm Saudi Arabia, a Wahhabi state that has the same ideology of ISIS, that beheads people in the public square for sorcery and witchcraft and drug smuggling, doesn't give women equal rights at all, calls all atheist terrorists, they're draconian, they're primitive, they're super fundamentalist, they're authoritarian. We don't care. We're going to 71 senators. Wow. I mean, those numbers right there, probably a great breakdown of, like, how big of a sellout the different people are. So 71 members of the Senate are beyond all hope, basically. That's what that shows. $1.15 billion. Now we're talking about $110 billion worth of arms to Saudi Arabia. So Trump, who used to call Saudi Arabia the number one state sponsor of terror, said, Obama with his measly $1.15 billion. Step aside, son. Here, let me show you how it's done. $110 billion. Oh, my goodness. But this is Rand Paul showing a little bit of strength here in bucking orthodoxy and following in the footsteps of his father, Ron Paul, who would have done this as well, who's saying, come on, what are we doing? They're more non-interventionist on foreign policy, and that's a good thing. But there's almost certainly not going to be enough people to stand up with him, which is crazy. It's fucking crazy that we're arming a terrorist country. Right now, they're carrying out a genocide in Yemen. Yes, I just used that word. Why did I use that word? Because that's what's fucking happening. It's not an even fight. Are you kidding me? You got ragtag Shia rebels over there, and you got U.S. fighter jets and cluster bombs and all the armament in the world and the biggest military with their intelligence apparatus behind you on the Saudi side, and they're bombing mosques, and they're bombing hospitals, and they're bombing schools and open-air markets and schools for the blind and using weapons that are illegal under international law and massacring babies. They're doing a blockade where now at least 14 million people are starving right now. They don't even let in humanitarian aid in many respects. So that's what's happening. That's what's happening in Yemen. And we're like, yeah, here, take $110 billion. And it's really worse than that because it's not just to continue the situation in Yemen, which, by the way, is way more one-sided than the situation in Syria, which is a civil war, which we're so eager to get involved in because, oh, humanitarian reasons. I don't care about humanitarian reasons. Care about what's happening in Yemen because we're backing that. We're on the wrong side of that. But it's worse than that because this $110 billion, it's not just to continue to arm a terrorist regime. It's to allow the terrorist regime to create their own NATO. They want to create a Gulf State Arab Sunni NATO that's going to encircle Iran and probably try to do something down the road. So this is the neocons' wet dream is Donald Trump. He's a little bitch to their grand plans, which are stupid, ridiculous, horrific plans that arm terrorists. So, god damn, this is gross, man. And Rand Paul, good on you for standing up, but unfortunately, you're probably going to get the same numbers. Maybe 26 people will go, yeah, I'm against $110 billion to a state that beheads people in the public square for apostasy. So don't give me your bullshit about, oh, freedom and human rights and democracy, which is why we just gave $110 billion in weapons to a regime that represents the polar opposite of everything we claim we stand for. Okay. Final story of the day. LGBTQ rights are continuing to expand. Taiwan made history as a court ruled in favor of same-sex marriage. So they're now the first place in Asia to welcome marriage equality. So this is from Reuters. They say, Taiwan's constitutional court declared on Wednesday that same-sex couples have the right to legally marry, the first such ruling in Asia, sparking celebration by activists who have been campaigning for the right for years. The court, known as the Judicial Yuan, I don't know how to pronounce that, I'm sorry, said, that should be easy enough, but I'm an idiot, said current marriage laws were in violation of both the people's freedom of marriage and the people's right to equality, and it gave 2 years for legal amendments to allow same-sex marriage. If relevant laws are not amended or enacted within the said 2 years, two persons of the same sex who intend to create the said permanent union shall be allowed to have their marriage registration effectuated, the court said. So, this is great news. You have gay marriage happening in more places now. The dominoes continue to fall. That's absolutely a step in the right direction. But the reason why I really wanted to cover this is just to remind everybody that just because in the U.S. now we have gay marriage doesn't mean, the fight for gay rights is over. Because not only is it not over, it's not even over in the U.S. We still don't have the LGBTQ community as part of anti-discrimination protections. So what that means is in over 20 states, I think the number is 22 states, you can be fired simply for being gay. You can be kicked out of a restaurant, kicked out of a place of business, simply for being gay. Now you say, that doesn't happen often. But shouldn't those protections be on the books either way, that you can't arbitrarily discriminate? I don't know, you're making me feel slightly uncomfortable because you're effeminate. I want to kick you out. I want to fire you, whatever. So the battle's not over. Now, granted, we've come much further in the West, clearly, than other places, but now the dominoes are starting to fall elsewhere as well, and that's a positive sign. But I want to remind you guys just how bleak the outlook is for gay rights around the world, and this is the case for a lot. Women's rights in a lot of places. Atheists are shunned in so many ways in so many places. But listen to this. There are 74 countries where being gay is illegal. So it's not even like, hey, it's legal, but they don't have the right to marry. It's not even legal to be gay, never mind get married. So that way, roll the clock way back in 74 countries, and there are 10 where you can be put to death for being gay. So the struggle for justice is not over. The struggle for freedom and equality and justice and liberty is not over, which is why, look, in our lifetimes, we're never going to see a time where every place has it. But to me, the feeling I get thinking of that is, oh, well, we just got to work harder. We just got to bust ass. We just got to work harder. We just got to organize better. We have to go full court press, full steam ahead, pedal to the metal. We just got to fight. And then eventually, to steal from the great philosopher DJ Khaled, we will win. But these things take time. These things take effort. And you can't just sit back and relax after you get one victory in one place. It's a much bigger effort, and all hands on deck. Okay. We're done, guys. I love you. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your day. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. You know the deal. It is disgusting here in New York, but I'm now going to go to the gym. That was a little bit of a humble brag. I'm back on my shit. I've been going to the gym, so... Feeling good about that. Anyway, now that I'm done humble bragging, everybody enjoy the rest of your day. Mwah. Peace.